welcome to the show.
Thanks. Hi.
Now, after your last feature, I'm 11, where you travelled around the world exploring the lives of 11-year-old girls. What was it that drew you to the topic of men's mental health?
Yeah, so I'm 11 is actually about boys and girls from 15 different countries, and it was really amazing not just shooting that film but releasing it and hearing audiences' feedback, and it started to make me think, what do I want to make next? And I was interested in our childhood and how that impacts on our adult life, and one of my best friends, Johnny, has a really amazing way of expressing his inner world. And I say in the film, John is at once the happiest and saddest man I've ever met. And I suppose the inspiration came there, thinking, well, how do we sort of navigate this dance in life between happiness and sadness and highs and lows? Mm. And then I started filming, and then I thought about some other men in my life that have interesting stories that I thought, well, I'd like to include them as well. So David was one of them, as well as Jake, Ivan and Grant.
Okay, so part of the challenge must have been finding subjects for the documentary willing to open up about the experience. How did you go about finding people and also just establishing the trust? Because, I mean, leaving people very vulnerable talking about their experiences, that would involve an enormous trust between the filmmaker and the subject.
Yeah, I wasn't so interested in doing like a snapshot in the day in a life of someone. I wanted to really explore some experiences over a number of years. So what I did was I spoke to a few different people, but really just started filming and spoke to them really what the idea was for the film. And that's what I hope is different about this film to some other projects, is that you feel like you really get to know the guys over a extended period of time. And each of the guys are as passionate as I am about shining a light on some more diverse images of men and masculinity and mental health, because I think sometimes we can see a very narrow view. And so these stories are playful, they're funny, there's joy in it. And for me, when I'm making films, you know, the poignant moments are just as important as the really funny belly laugh moments. So I'm really proud that we've created a documentary where people in the cinema actually laugh out loud, which is, I'm really excited about that.
Now, I think it's the farmer, Ivan, early discusses the unwillingness of men to often open up about things that are troubling them, because it sort of comes across as some sort of sense of weakness. How do you think this is an important thing about dealing with the stigma, is, you know, if we're going to improve the well-being of men in Australia, that we need to have a much more open conversation about being willing to talk about that we're all not superhuman, that we all sort of have our...
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Grant in the film has so many great ways of describing why that's important to speak up. One of the things he said recently is, if you've got someone in your life who's feeling down or not having a great time, you know, the worst thing you can say is, well, you should be happy for what you've got in life. You know, there's people worse off than you. Because Grant parallels that with saying to someone who's happy, why are you so happy? There's people who are better off than you. You shouldn't be so happy. And I think that that's what all the guys in the film have a really interesting, clear and concise way of expressing why it's so important that we don't ignore mental health, we don't ignore the damaging stereotypes around masculinity, because when we do, not only do the men in our lives suffer, but so do the women and children. And that's, for me as a filmmaker, what I'm really excited about, is starting these conversations that maybe even 5 years ago maybe audiences wouldn't have been as open as they are now.
In this film, you have war photographer Jake. He's recently returned from Syria. In the documentary, he talks about being in war zones and feeling almost like that's normal, and sort of witnessing horrific incidents, which of course led him to suffer from PTSD. Can you tell us a little bit about Jake's story?
Yeah, sure. So Jake and I met many years ago when I was directing a film. He was the cinematographer. He's always had a really beautiful eye at capturing images. And he started doing work in Afghanistan, working in predominantly in conflict and post-conflict zones as a war photographer. And every time he'd come back to Melbourne to visit family and friends, I would catch up with him and do some filming and learn a little bit about what had been going on for him. And I think the thing is that when audiences watch Happy Sad Man, it's true that not many of us can relate to living in a conflict zone or a war zone in the way Jake has. But what a lot of guys have been saying is what they relate to with Jake's story is he's living a life where you really push yourself to the edge and the extremes. And actually, he's passionate about doing something for the greater good. And I think sometimes guys watch the film and relate to that idea of you know, growing up watching superhero movies and action figures and kind of really wanting to be a hero in some way.
Well, he talks about that sort of growing up on those sort of 1980s sort of action films, sort of Arnie, and that sort of idea of the sort of heroic male, that sort of heroic male sort of archetype. That's obviously a fantasy image, but yeah.
Yeah, and Jake also talks about his biggest hero is his mum, and his mum, Nora, I call her Super Mama, because she is. She does a lot of amazing work in the community with a lot of women and refugees and asylum seekers and people who have come out of abusive relationships. So I think Jake also acknowledges in the film that even though we grow up thinking men are like the superheroes, actually women are extremely strong and powerful and resilient.
So, I mean, with Jake, you've got this experience where he's in dangerous situations, like filming in Aleppo, and at the same time, he's wanting to keep in contact with his beautiful daughter who's in France. Now, this must have been a difficult decision for David, sort of torn between two very competing needs. Now, you show that in the film. How, and that would be quite a common experience of a lot of people of having that sort of highly idealistic, you know, that purpose in life, wanting to sort of fulfill something, a very important sort of public need. And at the same time, you've also got the people immediately close to you that you need to care for. How difficult has it been for Jake to sort of balance those two sort of competing?
Yeah, it has been difficult. And I think that's what some audiences can relate to as well, being a parent who is away from their children a lot, or away from their older parents a lot, or just living a life where you're not always with the people you want to be with. So that's another thread in the narrative of the film that I think is an important one. And for Jake, living in, working in conflict zones, he puts himself at risk, but he's doing that because he feels like the world needs to know what's going on. But I'm really happy to share that Jake actually went to France last month and got to catch up with his daughter, which has been great to see. And he's really passionate about motorcycles. So Jake rides every year in the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride, which happens around the world and raises money for Movember for men's mental health. And yeah, it was a really amazing thing that he got to have his daughter on the back of a motorcycle with her and her mum's permission last month in France, and raise money. So yeah, things have been it's been a big year for Jake and for all the guys in the film, actually.
Also in the studio we have David, a Western Sydney artist. You might know him for his dashan, which has been displayed at the Museum of Contemporary Art. Now, throughout your life, you've struggled with anxiety and panic attacks. Can you tell us a little bit about what it's like living with anxiety?
Well, I think that I mean, I work a lot with my dashan, Tina, so I've learnt a lot about anxiety through her. She's very cautious of the world. I think when it comes to anxiety, it's something that I try for it not to define me. I mean, you might bump into me on the street and I might be totally fine and not experiencing anxiety that week. And then maybe in a few weeks' time, it might be all I'm experiencing, and that completely defines my living experience is anxiety. So with anxiety, I think, I'm just casting my mind back of what I found really helpful, and I've basically came into the work of Ruby Wax. Now, you might remember Ruby Wax from the 1990s. She interviewed a lot of celebrities and is pretty wild in her sense of humor. But she started to talk about mindfulness and the practice of mindfulness. And I believe went to Cambridge University to work with one of the people behind the modern notion of mindfulness. I heard her speak. I read some of her books. And so that really encouraged me to put mindfulness in practice. I also tend to try and surround myself with people that are understanding and that are going to be supportive. I think that's really important.
There's an interesting thing. You went to the doctor early on, it sounds like, and gave you some pretty poor advice. It's basically have a pill and lie down.
I've had some really interesting experiences with doctors when it comes to anxiety. I remember once going to a doctor that I just started seeing. He was a GP, and I said, oh, I would love to be able to go on a mental health plan. He said, oh, no, you have to be mental to go on a mental health plan. I was like, oh, gee, do I need to like urinate in your cup right now? Or like, how do I prove that I'm mental? Like, it was a very strange experience, and luckily I went to another doctor. But I was just thinking, you know, it's really unfortunate for somebody that maybe it took them 6 months to gain that courage to ask their GP to go on a mental health plan. And yeah, it's actually quite scary that's quite commonplace too.
I think on that note, you know, when David shared that story, which I've heard before, you know, he laughed and I'm smiling. Because David and I laugh when things sometimes are not funny. It's so cringeworthy that you go to see a GP and you get told you're not mental enough to get a mental health care plan, which everyone in Australia is entitled to go and speak to the GP. But what I want to add to that is I've shared that story actually in some of the Q&A screenings, and I actually wanted to let, you know, audiences know that David and Grant, the other guys, would all say that there's so many doctors out there and psychologists and psychiatrists and counsellors, as there are hairdressers. Now, if I went and got a really bad haircut somewhere, I just wouldn't go back again. So I think that that's the message we want to share as well, is that if it has been hard for you to seek help, and when you have approached people and been met with pretty unhelpful ideas.
About finding the right counsellor, the right psychiatrist that actually can understand where you're coming from.
And just for people to know, if you go and meet a doctor or a counsellor or a psychiatrist or psychologist and doesn't feel right, that's okay. Like, it's okay to find someone else. It's like dating. It's like you're not going to get along with everyone. And it's the same as when people are looking after our bodies or our minds. We should feel comfortable with them.
And finally, now we all sort of suffer from from traumas of life, but what sort of advice would you offer to people if they've to reach out if they've got a friend that's experiencing trouble? What sort of way would you approach the issue?
Yeah, there's a section in the film which we unofficially sort of called helpful/not helpful, where all the guys share with us what's helpful, what's not helpful. So if you're going through a difficult time, Grant will say that sometimes it's just really good to know you're loved. So if friends or family are texting him or calling him, you know, he might not want to call back or talk at that time, but he does feel for him that it's always good to know people are there. Whereas some people, like David explains in the film, don't you, that one of the worst things you can say to someone if they're having a hard time is, well, just snap out of it. Mm. Things like that. And I mean, it can be awkward because sometimes people don't know what to do, so they don't do anything, and they might do something. And if they tell you to snap out of it and that's not helpful, then they think, oops, I'm mucked up. Mm. So I think that's what I'm really excited about Happy Sad Man is doing, is having these really frank conversations about how we can better be there for our friends, because there's a big culture in Australia of mateship, you know, be there for your mates and have the back of your mates. But Dave Rustovich is a surfer who's in the film talking about what does it actually look like. Like, we can say, yeah, I got your back, but what does it actually look like when things are difficult? So I would say that communicating with people when they are feeling all right, like, what can I do next time you're feeling down?